Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for January 28, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the energy market with Dan O'Brien of Kansas State University in Colby, Kansas. In agricultural news, the Farm Bill is heading to the House floor for a vote. We got details. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on University of Illinois efforts to improve accuracy in USDA's crop production and WASDE numbers. And Don Day will have agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
WILL programming is made possible by the Illinois Pork Producers. Todd Gleason will present a Market Outlook Roundtable featuring Steve Meyer, Tom Fitzenmeyer, and Jackie Fakes on February 5th during the Illinois Pork Expo at the Peoria Civic Center. All farmers welcome. More info at ilpork.com.
Let's go ahead and see how futures are currently trading. Well, how they settled, excuse me. May hard red winter wheat at 620 is down a quarter. July, 615 and three quarters, down a quarter. Soft May, 571 and three quarters, up two. July, 576 and a half, up one and a quarter. March corn, the settlement, 432, up a quarter. July, 443 and a quarter, down three quarters. And December, 450 and three quarters, down one and three quarters. March soybeans, 1285 and a half, down two and a quarter. July, 1256 and a half, unchanged. And November, 1105, up three and a half. March soybean meal, 428.60, down 230. March soybean oil, 3740, up 34 cents. February live cattle, 142.42 and a half, down 72 and a half. January feeder cattle, the settlement there was 171.50, up 52 and a half. And then February lean hogs, the settlement at 85.27 and a half, and they are down 30 on the day. And those are today's settlements from the CME Group out of Chicago, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that the bottom line for Argentina during the next 2 weeks is that summer crop development in the heart of the main grain and oilseed production areas will continue to occur favorably, while the far southwest and extreme north may have a tendency to be a bit too dry. Brazil crops will also remain in good shape due to favorable subsoil moisture prevailing, while the topsoil firms up during the next week. Meanwhile, another U.S. storm will produce snow across the Central Plains and lower eastern Midwest Friday into Saturday. A dusting of 2 inches will occur in the Central Plains, but 2 to 6 inches and locally more may occur in Indiana, Ohio, and southeastern Michigan. Bitter cold will retreat to the north central U.S. states over the next few days and then remain there for the following week to 10 days.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Want to avoid the long registration lines at our 25th annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting? Call 217-333-7300 and order your tickets now for the March 4th event at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. They're $30, and along with a continental breakfast and Beef House lunch, you'll hear from Sue Martin and all our analysts on corn and soybean futures and cash grain marketing. And we'll also get the lowdown on land values for 2014 and look at the commodity title of the new farm bill. And you'll get a 25th anniversary commemorative hat marking the occasion. Call with your major credit card, 217-333-7300, and guarantee your spots. We'll mail your tickets to you. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is John Hester of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Dave.
A very quiet day today.
Yeah, it's very quiet, and what little action there was, it was pretty choppy. There was a little strength in the wheat market as Egypt secured another cargo of U.S. soft wheat, and they're still worried about a little winter kill. The weather forecast that I saw looked like that towards not this weekend, but the following weekend, we may get another Arctic blast coming down here, and probably won't be much snow cover on, and I think there's general concern that there may be some winter kill on the wheat.
When we look at the trading action, it doesn't even look like there was much spread activity today.
No, I don't think so. I think there may have been a little in the soybeans. Little profit taking from the last couple days, maybe unwinding a couple spreads, but really there wasn't, it was about like watching paint dry most of the day and move a quarter, half cent one way or another, and that was about it.
So is this what we anticipate for the balance of the week, typically? Is this where we're headed?
I think probably that unless, the financial situation, the devaluate the Rio more and against the dollar and some of these currencies, I think things have pretty well settled down. We're going to be in a very tight range for the rest of the week.
Okay, so if we're in tight range this week, and in fact, if we look back at the corn market, we've been in a tight range more or less, a 30-cent range since the beginning of November practically. What's it going to take to move this market one way or another, either to the downside or potentially something a little bit better than 435?
We get a couple more weeks down the road. It's going to be government report, planting intentions, what kind of weather they are expecting for our planting, and how well we get it in the ground. But I realize that's a couple months down the road, but we could be in a tight range for the next 4 to 6 weeks. I think if it could bust above 435, 436, then there's a good chance it might go to 440, 445, maybe even 450. And then I think that's would be a very good selling opportunity with the big crop possibility coming down the road that we probably will have.
What about soybeans and how you look at the range and going forward for the next couple of weeks?
Well, soybeans are a little different bird. China is, they tender for beans, seems like, for a bunch. And I would say inspections will be big again this week. And, I think beans, old beans have got a good chance to possibly get back to the 13-13-20 area, and at some point in time that something's going to have to slow our sales of beans down to China, because we're just not going to have the beans to sell. And I don't know whether it's high price or they cancel shipments or what they do, but at the pace we're going, I'm not even sure how many beans we really do have left as of today. course, I guess we really don't know what the production was, or we haven't got the final production number yet. So, but
what about new crop beans? At what price do you consider them good value to start doing some hedging opportunities?
Oh, I hope we haven't already missed that, but I'd like to see them back close to the $12 area. I mean, I don't know if that's too much to ask for or not, but, you know, but if we have poor planting and field delays when we plant, you know, there's possibly some, the beans could get a little life in them and we could get back to that $12 area. It only, you know, a 70-cent move, it only take a day and a half, so. But, you know, there, I think without a weather event, either in the United States or in South America, that beans are going to be pretty hard. Fall beans are going to be hard to get back above 12 and a half.
Thank you much, John.
All right. Hey, have a great afternoon.
Thank you. That's John Hester of L&M Commodities, and he is in New Market, Indiana.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
In agricultural news, U.S. farmers will have the choice of traditional price supports or insurance-like protection against a drop in crop revenue under the Farm Bill headed for a final vote in Congress. The bill was unveiled on Monday by Agriculture Committee leaders. The Shallow Loss Revenue Program and a $1 billion a year expansion of federally subsidized crop insurance are the bill's chief reforms for producers. Under the bill, growers will make a one-time choice for their corn, soybeans, wheat, and other program crops, whether to enroll for revenue protection based on yields and season average prices, or a program similar to target prices that sets a minimum price. For farmers who choose revenue protection, payments would become available when crop revenue is less than 86% of the rolling five-year average. They would end when revenue falls below 76% of the average. Crop insurance would cover deeper losses. Price loss coverage would operate similar to current law, with payments triggered when season average prices are below the guaranteed price. An audit by USDA's Inspector General says that USDA made more than $6 billion in improper payments across a wide range of programs last year. Improper payments occur when money goes to the wrong recipient or when the right recipient receives the incorrect amount of money, whether too much or too little, when documentation is not available to support a payment, or when a recipient uses funds improperly. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. USDA reports related to crops come under scrutiny every month. The accuracy is always questioned. The chief economist at USDA wanted to know if there was any good reason not to trust the numbers. Todd Gleason reports he tasked ag economists in the state of Illinois with digging through them for the truth.
An ag economist from Southern Illinois University and two from the University of Illinois released a study on the accuracy of USDA commodity numbers. The trio produced the report at the request of USDA chief economist Joseph Glauber. They looked at reports on corn, soybeans, and wheat from the World Agricultural Outlook Board and NAS, the National Agricultural Statistics Service. NAS releases monthly estimates of the size of the crops during parts of the growing season. It's called the Crop Production Report, and U of I Ag economist Scott Irwin says the estimates, well, they're pretty good.
We found some evidence that the NASS survey-based yield estimates for soybeans might have a creeping tendency towards a conservative bias early in the season, but that's fairly recent, and kind of you could quibble about whether that's really substantially bias or not. But overall, the yield forecasts come out looking quite good based on our analysis.
On the other hand, there seems to be something, if not inaccurate, at least not transparent enough for the market participants to get a handle on the quarterly grain stocks reports. Those two are produced by USDA NASS. The perception and the reality don't track together very well. Irwin says the change came in the middle of the last decade.
Something definitely happened after 2006, in the sense that if you look at the gap between what the marketplace was expecting before corn stocks estimates, before and after 2006, it is a very clearly something happened. The volatility of that difference is about twice as big after 2006 as compared to before.
This is especially true for the grain stocks report gathered by USDA December the 1st and reported in January. When the sampling error for that report approaches the wide end of the range, meaning it is within the range of the report but either far above or below the actual figure, it triggers volatility in each of the following three reports.
As you go through the year, if you just happen to get a year where the sampling error in that January number was unusually large, that can make it very hard to anticipate stock numbers the rest of the year.
That's for corn, and what I'll refer to as the range error doesn't ever really get fixed. However, if that same range error happens in a grain stocks report for soybeans, it does get fixed.
So the process works like this in soybeans. The USDA produces their January estimate of production, that's a quote-unquote final, in the middle of a marketing year. And then you know what the stocks were at the beginning of the year, that's total supply. And then you get to the end of the marketing year, and you have these other reports that allow you to say, okay, we used this much. And so you can, and then we also get a stocks report on, at the end of the marketing year on September 1st. And so you can take the beginning stocks plus production minus the use numbers from those reports and determine what the final stocks number should be.
The problem for corn is that USDA does not collect enough usage data to correct a bad figure from earlier in the year. The missing data is how much corn did the livestock sector feed. It has not been collected because there were too many producers in the past to make it a feasible task. Well, that's changed, and the ag economists from the state of Illinois have recommended USDA consider developing a livestock feeding report. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The 25th annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is March 4th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And along with our great panels on corn, soybeans, and cash grain markets, we'll hear Sue Martin's agricultural outlook. Murray Wise will give us the lowdown on land values in 2014. And we'll get everyone up to speed on the commodity title of the new Farm Bill. The cost is $30 and includes a continental breakfast, Beef House lunch, and 25th anniversary commemorative hat. Guarantee your spot. Register now at 217-333-7300 with your major credit card, and we'll mail your tickets. That's 217-333-7300. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us for our look at energy markets is Dan O'Brien of Kansas State University out of Colby, Kansas. Good afternoon, Don.
Yes, good afternoon. How's it going, Dave?
I'm trying to stay warm.
So are we out here in Kansas.
Now that we're into 2014 and looking at the new year and looking at it in context of the Environmental Protection Agency exploring whether to lower the renewable fuels standard, how does it all play out?
Well, when we look when you look at what was produced in 2013 for these various categories, again, whether it's grain ethanol on the one hand, biodiesel, advanced biofuel, even cellulosic ethanol, we basically just received from the EPA in the last day or so the numbers of that were produced, and say for grain-based ethanol, 13.1 billion gallons produced in 2013, projected to produce 13.8 in 2014 with the mandate, and the EPA, of course, has come out with a proposal now under consideration to scale that back to 13 even. That's for corn, feed grain-based ethanol. For biodiesel, produced 1.523 billion gallons in 2013. The mandate for 2014 is 1.28. EPA has come in and proposed that for 2014 we'd match the mandate 1.28, and for advanced biofuels actually produced 2.3 billion gallons. The RIN number is 1.5 times that, but the 2.3 is a little bit under the for 2013 would be a little bit under the mandated amount for 2014 at 2.5, and here the EPA has come out. And in their proposed numbers, they're looking at from 2 to 2.5. And as you and I have talked about before, Dave, the cellulosic ethanol number is not that it's not important, but pretty small relative to these other numbers. So you ask the question, what does that mean for the coming year? I think that the big issue that we would wrestle with, we wonder about in terms of corn price determination or feed grain price determination, given milo and other crops, would be this scaling back of the D6 requirement down from instead of having a growth of 800,000 gallons probably 800 million gallons in the coming year, we'd be staying level, and you're scaling back the most inelastic demand portion of for corn when you consider corn ethanol usage versus exports or livestock feed usage or even wet corn milling. And that on the margin, when you've had a large supply come in like we've had this year, you're weakening the strongest element, the most inelastic part of that demand. So and I think we're seeing lower corn prices as a result of that. Again, we're closer to four in many areas than 5.5, 6 as to where we've been the last 2 or 3 years. So it'll no doubt have some effect on the drive that we've had in the market to have to make sure we met our needed mandates. Of course, when the price price of corn had come down, it had a positive impact on the profitability of ethanol plants, and we'd seen a response on that here during the fall months of 2013. And now we're getting to a place where you're seeing headlines along the lines of spot ethanol market getting, quote, crushed by rising supplies, or prices tumble on stock rebuilding. You know, you can see various articles with those types of headlines just within the last few days. So now it seems that the bloom we had in ethanol profitability that was brought on by the lower input prices for corn is now starting to, as it's borne fruit, I guess, we're starting to see ethanol plant profitability now come down as the prices are declining. So much is going to depend on where the EPA finally makes that determination on their proposed RFS changes, and that will be coupled, no doubt, with the type of crop prospects here in the U.S. and overseas we have for corn, soybeans, and any other crop that feeds into and is a part of the renewable fuel standard.
Thank you, Dan.
Take care, Dave.
Dan O'Brien of Kansas State University out of Colby, Kansas. It's National Blueberry Pancake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1855, William S. Burroughs was born, an American inventor. Burroughs invented and manufactured the first adding machine with a printer. Also in 1885, the first locomotive ran from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific on the Panama Railway. In 1945, Swedish ships brought food to starving Netherlands. In 1981, U.S. President Ronald Reagan lifted remaining domestic petroleum price and allocation controls in the U.S., helping to end the 1979 energy crisis and begin the 1980s oil glut.
And in 1985, 45 of the world's top recording artists were invited to an all-night recording session at the A&M Studios in Los Angeles. As each of the artists walked through the studio door, they were greeted by a hand-lettered sign put there by Lionel Richie. It simply said, "Check your ego" at the door. The session started at 10 p.m., with producer Quincy Jones conducting. At 8 o'clock the following morning, the project U.S. for Africa was recorded and mixed. The resulting song, We Are the World, featuring Michael Jackson, Cyndi Lauper, Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton, Sting, Harry Belafonte, Diane Ross, Paul Simon, and many others, became the top song in the U.S. on April 13th of that very same year. The All-Star Charity event was created to raise money for U.S. for Africa, a nonprofit organization benefiting starving residents of Ethiopia. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
More of the same, it seems, for the most part. Mostly ideal weather in Brazil and Argentina with a few dry pockets, yes?
Yeah, and one thing about Argentina, it does look a little more wet. The pattern's gotten a little bit better lately, and that trend's going to continue. If there's an area in South America that's looking a little drier, it looks like Brazil, especially in some of those northeast areas, but conditions there look a little bit better here, especially in the next week.
And we turn our attention then to the U.S., where, boy, it continues to be cold.
It's going to be just a pattern going into February that's just not going to change much. A lot of the same fundamental conditions that have led to the very cold winter in the Midwest will continue into February. I do think we're going to see a more westward shift in some of the cold and stormy weather, but it's really not going to do a lot for especially folks in the Corn Belt. While it may not be as cold at times in February, I think we may make up with that with better opportunities for snowfall.
What are the factors that have led to this cold snap this winter?
Well, a few things, you know, what we call on the macro level. The key driver to this winter has been warm temperatures in the water just off the west coast of Canada and the Gulf of Alaska. Simply put, what ends up happening is you get high pressure that builds along the west coast, partly the reason for the drought on the west coast. But when you put high pressure and you extend it very far north into the Gulf of Alaska, into those higher latitudes, it forces a lot of that high latitude cold south.
So what are the things that can break that up?
Basically what we got to do is we got to get into March, got to get you know, the days longer, the nights shorter, and start warming things up and changing weather patterns in many areas of the northern latitudes.
All right, let's take it back to the now, where I believe more storms are going to produce snow across the central plains and the lower eastern Midwest.
Yeah, definitely. And what we're going to see is a real battle take place. There's going to be more in the way of this cold coming, but also there's going to be more Pacific influence now. This is going to make for more energetic storms across the nation's midsection. This is going to help some dry areas of the southwestern and central plain states, which haven't really had much snow this season. That's going to change. We also have some good news for central and northern California, Washington, and Oregon. In the next week, those areas have a chance of precipitation as well.
But places like Indiana could get hit pretty hard, I suspect.
Yeah, really. The whole Midwest, you know, we don't see it as severely cold, but we do see snow chances getting higher in February.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, have you reserved your tickets for the March 4th All-Day Ag Outlook meeting yet at the Beef House? They're just $30. Call 217-333-7300 to reserve your seats for the event with your major credit card. 217-333-7300. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.
Thank you.